welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are in the midst, we're almost through Madison's letter to John G. Jackson. And so we'll dive straight into that. And what I want to do is kind of give you the overview of why this letter is so important. But before we do, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, or actually RepublicReview.org. I'm sorry, we just did that. Anyway, you are listening to the only show that is not here for entertainment purposes. You are listening to the only show that is here to help educate you on what the real truth of our history is, what the truth of our Constitution, what these things really mean. And that's because you can find the truth in the ratification debates. And that's what this letter actually helps us grasp. Anyway, we have the comment line out there, 425-270-5416. If you want to pipe in, you know, Bill O'Reilly wants you to be pithy. I want you to be concise as possible, but I want you to, you know, articulate your full thought. We want to have that conversation. It's a symbiotic relationship. We get that. And we do have content that we go through. So as I was just saying in our previous episode, we will integrate your comments when we are having marketing or when I'm not really going through a document like we are currently right now. So pipe in if you've got a question, if you have a problem, as long as it's not personal, the problem with what we're saying or that type of thing. Be civil. That's one of the things I always ask. Please be civil. You know, when somebody all of a sudden starts insulting me, not that it's justifiable, but it's hard for me to maintain civility. And I don't know if that's just that rigidness of the Marine Corps in me. I try to be, you know, as fair, civil, and honest as I possibly can with people. Actually, I'm always honest, but I try to be honestly civil. I mean, even though it doesn't come that way, and I say this because I know I've insulted people and I know I hurt people's feelings all the time because I'm not the most sensitive person. I sometimes feel like I suffer from Tourette syndrome because I don't make things politically correct and I don't, you know, stroke people's egos. Not that I'm brutal, but I happen to have this, and I'll leave it as an insensitivity. So if I've insulted you or if I've done something that has caused you pain, I apologize. It's never been my intent. It's only my intent to challenge your paradigm. And sometimes to do that, you got to get pushed a little bit. You've got to be pressured. You have to be, you know, put into the position where you actually go, wow, am I right or am I wrong here? Anyway, we've got the listener drive. Please get people involved in listening to the truth of what the framers actually said. Hear their words right here. Because if you want to listen to somebody's opinion, there are hundreds of channels out there of people pontificating what they believe is important. I am going to read to you, I will give you editorializing and what I think is important, but I'm actually going to tell you what the framers actually said. What's more important? Editorializing constantly or actually hearing the words from Madison, hearing the words from Jefferson, Iredell, and these brilliant men that were involved in establishing this constitutional republic? Anyway, we are in a constitutional crisis, but I'm not going to dive into that. We're in the midst of this letter, and when we're done with this letter, we're going to dive into the Monroe Doctrine, which is it's kind of a line in the sand of when America was no longer the little kid on the block. In other words, we finally felt a security as a nation where we could start actually not just, you know, protecting our liberty, but advocating liberty for others. Because And we'll get into this because the Monroe says it best of why we were doing this. And so that's why this is important. Don't forget our comment line, 425-270-5416. So what Madison was doing in this letter was he was literally laying out, you know, what some of the historical precedents that drove this convention and why this Constitution was done the way it was. And he kept on pointing to, you know, that America was at the peril of actually collapsing and losing this grand revolution to the concept of going into a monarchy and being folded back into Britain. And so he and many of these men were very, very cognizant of this. There were those, like I was saying, that Hamilton wanted, and as a matter of fact, I wish I had the citation. When Hamilton got up, before he rode out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to go back to New York, he basically gave a speech to the entire convention that says he doesn't agree with any of this drivel. He believes that we need to have a monarch, we need to have a strong president, and he was using the vernacular, but the undertones and the way he started directing the federal government and trying to undermine the Constitution afterwards only lays to, you know, what a nefarious man this was. He may have had the most noble intentions, but as Washington stated in his farewell address, noble intentions are always the tools that destroy free governments. And Hamilton, again, was guilty of noble intentions that were designed over time. Maybe he didn't understand this, and I would have a hard time saying that he wouldn't understand it, because he was one of the most literate men. The only person who was more literate than Hamilton was Madison. And that's just due to the fact that Jefferson was pouring books into Madison while Jefferson was in France during the Revolution and so forth. And so when all of these books came in to go to Monticello, Madison was the recipient of them. And so he read these books before he took them down to Monticello. I mean, so here's an opportunist, right, in becoming even more literate and more educated than anybody on the North American soil on things that had, books that had never been grasped in America at that point in time. So anyway, let me get back to where we were, and I want to reread this. Whether the Constitution, as it has divided the powers of government between the states and their separate and in their united capacities, tends to be an oppressive aggrandizement of the general government, or to an anarchical independence of the state governments, is a problem which time alone can absolutely determine. It is, and I'm going to tell you right now, time has passed. We have well over 200 years, and we now see that the anarchical independence of the states has not been the problem. It has been the manipulation of using government to buy and subjugate the states in controlling them, the aggrandizement of the general government, not the oppression of the general government. It is much to be wished that the division as it exists, or as it may be made, or as it may be made with the regular sanction of the people, may effectually guard against both extremes. For if it cannot be doubted that an accumulation of all power in the general government would as naturally lead to dangerous accumulation in the executive hands, as the resumption of all power by the several states would end in the calamities incident to the contiguous and revival sovereigns, to say nothing of its effect in lessening the security for sound principles of an administration within each of them. There have been epochs when the general government was evidently drawing a disproportion of powers into its vortex. There have been others when states threatened to do the same. At the present moment, it would seem that both are aiming at encroachments each on the other. One thing, however, is certain. that in the present condition and temper of the community of the general government cannot long succeed in encroachments contravening in the will of the majority of the states and of the people. Its responsibility to these would provide, as was provided on the conspicuous occasion, quickly arrests its career. If at the time the powers of the general government be carried to unconstitutional lengths, it would be the result of a majority of the states and people actuated by some impetuous feeling or some real or supposed interest overruling the minority of not of successful attempts by the general government to overpower both. In estimating the greater tendency in the political system of the Union to a subversion or a separation of the states composing it, there are some considerations to be taken into account which have been little adverted by the most ocular authors of the science of government and which are but imperfectly developed as yet by our own experience. Such are the size of the states, the number of them, the territorial extent of the whole, and the degree of external danger. Each of these, I am persuaded, will be found to contribute its impulse to the practical direction which our great political machine is to take. And with that, we'll wrap up the last few comments that he has when we come back from this break. But I want you to see, he's actually looking at this at a real macro view and seeing that it could go in these different directions. But I think that he was missing a few things. And we'll be back on that analysis when we come back.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so actually the rest of this letter is really more on a personal note, and it basically starts off with, "We learn for the first time the second law sustained by your parental affections." In other words, they had just lost another child, and the John G. Jackson and his wife. And so the last two paragraphs are really on the personal nature and not talking about our great political machine is to take. So I will kind of break it right there. And so what I will attempt to do is start looking at some of the things that Madison is very painfully aware of, but he doesn't see a way forward. And one of those things that was also happening that you don't know, because Monroe was, he was a good man, but he was a good man on two sides. So here he allowed slavery to be extended into the Missouri Compromise, but he also was repatriating freemen, free blacks, back to Africa in the procurement of Liberia and the repatriating of the blacks back to Liberia in creating Monrovia and this land of free in Africa for these people. And when I say these people, those who wanted to leave because of slavery, as Thomas Sowell put it, slavery wasn't the cause of bigotry. It was a byproduct of that because of the design of slavery in America. Now, slavery throughout the world was pretty much it wasn't a racial issue. As a matter of fact, the preferred slaves of the world were the Slavs. That's where the derivative of slave came from. Thomas Sowell talks about this in Black Rednecks and White Liberals. And I will tell you, if you want to understand, you know, some of the history, the truth about slavery, you need to read that book. Anyway, so Madison was, I don't want to say he wasn't aware of all of these problems. I mean, Jefferson used the term, we have the wolf by the ears. We can no more let it go. Then, you know, we can safely hold it. I mean, either way, the wolf is in our midst, and this wolf wasn't necessarily the blacks. It was the institution of slavery that in what Britain had done, and this really was one of the passions of Thomas Jefferson. When you read the original draft of the Declaration of Independence, which I charge everybody to do, especially for Independence Day, he lays the blame on King George, and it's squarely on King George's shoulders, that the institutionalizing of racism, or by creating a very specific race and relegating them to enslavement in America, unlike anywhere else in the world. Because, you know, slaves were just those people who you just conquered. And there were, in every other country, slavery was a very diverse tool. I mean, except in Egypt, right? In Egypt, the slaves were Israel. And or the Jews, if you want to put it that way. But that was one of the only two times in the world's history where a very specific culture was enslaved, if you think about it. And the interesting thing is, and the thing you don't learn about in history, is God had played a plan, or, you know, played a role in the freeing of slavery, both in Egypt and in America. There's no doubt. But they don't want you, the historians don't want you to make any association or relationship to God having any presence, because they're deniers of creation. They believe that they believe in the falseness of what they assert as evolution. This is why I go into the Miller-Ulrich experiment. I know I'm going down a real rat hole here, but this is why I go into the Miller-Ulrich experiment as proof that evolution couldn't work. Clearly, the Miller-Ulrich experiment proved that the building blocks for life exist. And where did they find it? Well, the Bible tells you where you'd find it. It's from the clay of the earth. They were able to take the clay of the earth and create a protein goo, and they were able to inject electrical pulses like lightning or electrostatic electrical charges that were hitting this protein goo that would set it up to be the foundation for the building blocks for a cell. The problem is, okay, you've got the building blocks for the cell, but you don't have the key ingredients in creating life. And this is how I basically put it, and I think this will make sense for you. on Earth, we have all of the physical minerals and the necessary elements in creating a computer. And over time, there is a good likelihood that over a trillion years, the turning and the churning of the Earth could actually create a computer. It could evolve. The evolution of minerals and so forth that exist on this Earth could create and evolve a computer. The problem is because the physical constructs of the computer could possibly take form. However, the computer would never turn on because it requires software and the intelligence of how to make that computer work. And this was the problem, and this is why the whole deviation and the mantra, evolution, 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 we're all programmed, it's all in the DNA. And then they started actually realizing that they were wrong and they've buried the truth. I mean, it's the same thing with the declaration in 1971 or 72 that homosexuality was a genetic design, that it was within the genes of the individual. Well, that came out of the APA, the American Psychological Association, and the APA in 2009 recanted that, but that never made the news, and they still teach this crap today. The fact is that science has lost this argument, and the whole point of evolution, these narratives, and everything else regarding what Madison was seeing, because it's not that he was seeing this evolution, but he was seeing that America was in a position that he didn't see forward other than, you know, what Mason basically declared, that we were going to have a civil war so that the fundamental paradigm of liberty in America, the Declaration of Independence, and this concept that all people were to be free would have to basically be the epoch, or a new epoch, or a new era for America. The problem is that we've just had so many evil people with designs, machinations, if it's a better word, or, you know, the pernicious paradigms of some of these men that wanted to control and wanted to divide. You got to remember that the Illuminati and the globalist position, I should say, let's just say the concept of globalism and global control and a global government became alive and well in, was it 1776? Yeah, that's when Adam Weishaupt. It's a coincidence, right, that in 1776, the Declaration of Independence was written, and the Wealth of Nations was written by Adam Smith, and that the Illuminati Charter was written by Adam Weishaupt. Just so you know, the concept of conspiracy, governments, and everything else is not something that has come forth in the mid-1900s. There was a gentleman by the name of John Robinson, Sir John Robinson, in 1798, published a book, Proofs of a Conspiracy Against All the Religions and Governments of Europe, by John Robinson. You want that book? It's 239 pages, and it's on the Red State Talk Radio podcast page on reclaimingtherepublic.org. Download it. If you want to hear how we have been set up by these dark forces, this is, like I said, basically 20 years after the Illuminati started working together in moving us. So bottom line, because we need to get into the Monroe Doctrine, Madison did see this potential of either the central government taking control or the states taking control. He didn't realize that over time, by using industries and banking and so forth, that those, and I think he kind of missed the understanding of politics, because he was an ideological man and he was not one that was bought. He was not one that could be bought. So the people that had money never approached him. They, you know, he was unapproachable. So the bottom line is he didn't realize how money and the influence of those elite in America were already moving America in the direction of consolidating power at the general government and marginalizing the state government. And so the South kind of recognized this divide, and after the Civil War and the unifying of the parties as well as unifying the nation unconstitutionally under corporations was the beginning of our demise, because this is where the parties started dividing us and the elitists started dividing us, and they divided us racially first, and then they divided us over all these other little issues of gender and form, other things of demographics, ideologies, and so forth. When we come back from the break, we're going to go straight into the Monroe Doctrine. I think I've editorialized it to ad nauseum. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, even though I said I was done editorializing, actually there's a couple of other things that I really have to point out. Because when it comes to division, I think the adversary, or Satan, that goes into a level of division that most conservatives and Christians are not even recognizing, and they allow themselves to get dragged in. And so I'll use a great example. There's a gentleman that I was talking to that, you know, a lover of the Constitution, part of the Constitution Party in the past, but he left the Constitution Party because of over one issue. He felt that there wasn't enough embracement, and he wanted focus on the abortion issue because it was a passionate issue for him. And so he himself left the Constitution Party because he felt that there were members, and he pointed to a religious ideology that excused abortion in some perspectives. And he says he remembers that that just became this huge compromise, and he says, I'm not going to be a part of a party of compromise. This is the problem, that conservatives don't understand how we are being divided over conservative matters. That is because we are putting a very specific topic, a very myopic issue over the Constitution, and we have to stop. If it is about abortion for you and not the Constitution, then good luck, because we will lose this Constitution. In perspective, the federal government has no constitutional authority over abortion, life, and so many other things. But we have to audit the Constitution, we have to unite, and we have to force the federal government. If you're only looking to stop abortion and you're okay with the rest of the tyranny, you've got a problem. Your problem in magnitude may seem like a greater moral issue. As I told this gentleman, that based on Biden's comments regarding going after people who, you know, have conservative views as if they're domestic terrorists, we're heading down the path of China, where they're going to start creating prison camps for conservatives, and they'll probably start organ harvesting here in America as well, just like what they're doing in China. But they demonize and they use demagoguery to go after those who are the champions of the Constitution. They're very focused. They're going to look at everybody, whether you're a Second Amendment person, whether you are a abortion person, it doesn't matter to them. You're the enemy, and you're willing to point yourself out over your myopic issue. When we focus on the Constitution and not the myopic issues, and we point out that all of these myopic issues are not powers that the states have delegated to the general government, then we're on the moral high ground. You're off the moral high ground when you just say the sanctity of life and birth is the most important thing of all things, because I believe your right of conscience, I believe your right of choice and liberty is far more important, that everybody be free to choose. You know, when when Christ was there with the adulteress and they were getting ready to stone her, and they wanted to, you know, get Christ involved in it, and they said, you know, Lord, you know, we're going to stone this person. I think they went through the law, and I think they, you know, wanted to get him involved. And bottom line, he said, he without sin cast the first stone. And then they all walked away. And then he basically didn't judge the woman, and he didn't care. He just said, where are your accusers? And obviously they were gone. And she was looking for forgiveness, and he just told her, go and sin no more. We're all going to make mistakes. But when you want to make an issue, and I'm sorry for going down this tangent coming back from the break, but this has really been burning me. When you want to go down these tangents, these rat holes, and you want to make one issue more important, and at the cost of taking away the liberty of somebody else, then we've got some problems. The whole focus when it comes to abortion is it is a state issue. Once we make it a state issue, then there will be lots of states that will go back to making abortion either illegal or very restrictive. You want to have a, you know, an abortion that, you know, goes to any length other than infanticide, you may have to come to the state of Washington. Washington was the first state that legalized abortion. And, you know, there may be some other blue states, because they're blue states now that are practically practicing infanticide. Virginia, New York, and a few others. But I believe once we get the federal government out of the way and dictating that this is a constitutional right when it's not, it's clearly not in the Constitution, then we win the argument. And then we can actually start taking the debate to 50 states and 50 battlefields and start winning the argument there as well. But now you're dealing with it on a single issue. The real issue that we're all facing is compliance to the Constitution. It's not abortion. It's not homosexual marriage. It's not Obamacare. It's not Common Core. The issue is compliance to the Constitution. And because we choose to pick a myopic issue as the most sacred and sanctimonious, then we, too, are dividing ourselves. We have to unite on the Constitution. So anyway, let me get into the Monroe Doctrine, because this was a huge paradigm change. You have to understand that up to this point, because there were these big, powerful European countries that had lots of ships and big guns and so forth, that were pretty much warrior states. I mean, look at Spain and Portugal. They ruled with a heavy iron fist in every country they conquered, especially south of us. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to go as far as to say that we were probably, or I should say, the American Indians were very lucky that it wasn't the Portuguese, or more importantly, the Spaniards, that didn't do conquest in the United States area and in Canada. They should be very happy that the civility of the British and the French were the ones that focused on the very northern part of this hemisphere. Because had Spain sensed the golden riches under the soil and in manufacturing and so forth here, it would have been a lot different. There wouldn't have been Mexicans. There would have been a different term for the way they breathed with the indigenous people. Because you have to understand, that was one of the ways that they conquered you emotionally, was by taking your women and impregnating them. Then you had kids that were half of the conquerors, and that started creating compassion. There was a, I believe it was Braveheart, where even England, this was an evil, dark practice that the European nations practiced in subjugating people. You know, I believe in Braveheart, it happened at the wedding point, but I don't believe that there was maybe that level of restraint in Spain. I think that, and it wasn't just the lords that were able to do it. I believe that it was just open season on all of the women that were still alive underneath Cortez and these other conquerors when they were here. So looking at the conquests and, you know, how Europe came here to civilize and take control. Well, Britain had already civilized and had taken control and migrated the Dutch colony of New Amsterdam into New York. So now we have the British Empire that's, you know, all over the face of North America, Canada, and so forth. And so we now have the Britain starting to treat their own citizens like chattel. And so we create this Revolutionary War. And we fight, and we beat them. We defeat them. And what ends up happening is it took us this much time until we finally got to 1823, which is almost a decade after our ending of the Revolutionary War and the Treaty of Ghent. Because when, if you consider the War of 1812 to be anything but the ending of the Revolutionary War, you're looking at it too myopically, because that Revolutionary War was never ended because the treaty was never honored. In other words, the hostilities, you know, were still there. It just didn't kick into a true military conflict until 1812. And I think that's when the British Crown and Parliament was getting kind of antsy, saying, you know what, this experiment is going on a little bit too long, and we're seeing a little bit too much, you know, guff coming from these revolutionaries that have kicked our butt. We're going to go in and teach them the final lesson. And they didn't. We won. So it took a decade. And if you understand, you know, the most anybody, you can talk to a, I don't say a teenager, but let's say somebody in their 40s, you can talk to somebody in their 40s about a decade of their life, and they can be very cognizant and they can get into good details. It's not a lot of time in the grand scheme of things here. So here we are a decade later, and Monroe is making a real paradigm shift. We'll be right back after these two messages.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so it took me another whole segment to kind of go into even more depth and detail regarding how we're being divided. And people are very, very frustrated on the conservative side at how we're divided. But the problem isn't necessarily the entire side. I think the problem has more to do with each of us not willing to give up our little pet peeve. It's our little baby. We hold it dearly to us, and that's the problem. But anyway, as I was basically saying going into break, 10 years is not a lot of time. If you look at the ending of the Treaty of Ghent, which was 1814, the war really didn't go into effect, and the war really didn't finish until 1815. So we're looking 7-8 years later that we're finally at a point as a nation that we can send a message to the entire world that we are the champions of liberty. And this is how Monroe does it. So most people think that the Monroe Doctrine was this, you know, foreign policy that was communicated to the world when actually, excuse me, the Monroe Doctrine was something that James Monroe, as president, expressed during his 7th annual message to Congress, December 2nd, 1823. And so this is what he says, and I'm not going to read the entire inaugural address, but I'm going to read what he said that was the meat to the Monroe Doctrine. At the proposal of the Russian imperial government, made through the minister of the emperor residing here, a full power and instructions have been transmitted to the minister of the United States at St. Petersburg, to arrange by amicable negotiation the respective rights and interests of the two nations on the northwest coast of this continent. A similar proposal has been made by His Imperial Majesty to the government of Great Britain, which has likewise been acceded to. The government of the United States has been desirous by this friendly proceeding of manifesting the great value which we have invariably attached to the friendship of the emperor and their solicitude to cultivate the best understanding with his government. In the discussions to which this interest had given rise, and in the arrangements by which they may terminate, the occasion has been judged proper for asserting. As a principle in which the rights and interests of the United States are involved, that the American continents, by the free and independent condition which they have assumed and maintained, are henceforth not to be considered as subjects for future colonization by any European powers. It was stated at the commencement of the last session that a great effort was then making in Spain and Portugal to improve the conditions of the people to those countries, and that it appeared to be conducted with extraordinary moderation. It need scarcely be remarked that the results have been so far very different from what was then anticipated of events in that quarter of the globe with which we have so much intercourse and from which we derive our origin. We have always been anxious and interested spectators. The citizens of the United States cherish sentiments the most friendly in the favor of liberty and happiness of their fellow men on that side of the Atlantic. In the wars of the European powers in matters relating to themselves, we have never taken any part, nor does it comport with our policy to do so. It is only when our rights are invaded or seriously menaced that we resent injury or make preparation for our defense. With the movements in this hemisphere, we are of necessity more immediately connected, and by causes which must be obvious to all enlightened and impartial observers. The political system of the Allied powers is essentially different in this respect from that of America. This difference proceeds from that which exists in their respective governments and to the defense of our own, which has been achieved by the loss of so much blood and treasure and matured by the wisdom of their most enlightened citizens, and under which we have enjoyed unexampled felicity. This whole nation is devoted. We owe it, therefore, to candor and to the amicable relations existing between the United States and those powers to declare that we should consider any attempt on their part to extend their system to any portion of this hemisphere as dangerous to our peace and safety. He's starting to see this is, he's kind of saying, hey, you're meddling is done. With the existing colonies or dependencies of any European power, we have not interfered and shall not interfere but with the governments who have declared their independence and maintain it, and whose independence we have, on great consideration and on just principles, acknowledged we could not view any interposition for the purpose of oppressing them or controlling in any other manner their destiny by any European power in the other light than has been manifestation of an unfriendly disposition towards the United States. I want to go back here because they're basically saying that they were not going to, they've had no plan on interpositioning, but if we had the view of interposition, it's not because it was with the intent of oppressing them or control, quote, or controlling in any other manner their destiny. Well, so one of the things we just learned in reading the Missouri Compromise is how the state of Missouri, under the controls of the United States, was already receiving levels of oppression. They may have been fragments, you know, the mineral rights, those types of things, but the federal government was already beginning to flex unconstitutional powers and oppressing states. And states had no clue at this point because they weren't really a part. And you got to understand, this is almost 50 years, a half a century since the Revolutionary War, and coming up on a half a century of the ratification of the Constitution. Understanding the Constitution was becoming a, you know, the candle was beginning to go out. And most people, they had, you know, they maintained, the principles of liberty were so strong at that point in time from the Constitutional Convention that it took a century for people to really, you know, start going well beyond. Actually, it was over a half a century, because 1849, there was no reservations whatsoever when the federal government created the Department of Home, the Department of the Interior. And the intent was to maintain and mingle and meddle in state affairs that they had no constitutional standing to do. They just assumed that they could do it because the people before them, like John Marshall and others, said, you can do whatever you believe is necessary and proper, and started perverting what those lines, excuse me, what those lines in the Constitution meant. Okay? So, moving on. In the war between those new governments and Spain, we declared our neutrality at the time of their recognition, and to this we have adhered and shall continue to adhere, provided no change shall occur, which, in the judgment of the competent authorities of this government, shall make a corresponding change on the part of the United States indispensable to their security. The late events in Spain and Portugal shew that Europe is still unsettled. Of this important fact, no stronger proof can be adduced than that the Allied powers should have thought it proper, on any other principle satisfactory to themselves, to have interposed by force in the internal concerns of Spain. To what extent such interposition may be carried on the same principle is a question in which all independent powers whose governments differ from theirs are interested, even those most remote, and surely none of them more so than the United States. Our policy in regard to Europe has been, which was adopted at an early stage of the war, which has so long agitated that quarter of the globe, nevertheless remains the same, which is not to interfere in the internal concerns. Excuse me. I may need some liquid magic here for my tongue. It's getting twisted a little bit. Nevertheless, remains the same, which is not to interfere in the internal concerns of any of its powers. To consider the government de facto as the legitimate government for us, to cultivate friendly relations with it, and to preserve those relations by a frank, firm, and manly policy, meaning in all instances, and boy, that manly policy would just go over, wouldn't it? Okay, so obviously we didn't get a chance to finish this, so we will finish the Monroe Doctrine, and we'll repeat the manly policy tomorrow, just to upset every politically correct progressive that's out there. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help, and we will wrap up the Monroe Doctrine in our next episode. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.